Okay, welcome to part two of Chazara Shir 4, Contemporary Halacha 5773. We'll talk about the shir regarding donating blood, bone marrow, and kidneys by Rabbi Dr. Shabtai. Of course, whenever you have an issue of somebody else's life at hand, there are two simultaneous chiyuvim to talk about, or isurim to talk about. One's actually chiyuv, one's an isur. Mitzvah Saseda Raisa of Hashavas Aveda, which the Gemara extends a kavachomer if mamono, certainly gufo, and then that's an assay. It's actually an assay and a los assay. And then we have a lota assay of los amada damrei echa. Nafkamina between something being an assay versus a los assay is whether you're only mechuyev to be to give up a chomesh, or you mechuyev to give up kol mamono if it would be a los assay. Let's talk about. Do I have to endure physical tsar to save another person's life? So there are two Gemaras at hand that both have the same interesting conclusion. The Gemara Nedarim talks about a river that's flowing from upriver down to downriver, and there's only enough water in the city for the upper. There's only enough water in this river for the upper city, not the lower one. So therefore, the top city can build a dam and keep the water so that they could have water to drink, at the expense of the city on the bottom, who will not have water to drink. Okay, chayecha kolman, of course. What about where it's the upper city's water to take baths or to wash clothing with, as opposed to the lower city having water just to live and be sustained? The Gemara, believe it or not, concludes that since not doing your laundry is going to be a tsar, that will take precedence over the lower cities having water to drink and to live. Which is a fascinating maskan. It sounds like my tsar of wearing dirty laundry takes precedence over the life of those in the other city. Similarly, the Shulchan Aruch paskens reads the Gemara in Ksuvis that a woman who's nursing and says that she wants certain foods, she craves certain foods, and whatever it might be, she is allowed to, and her husband can't stop her from eating whatever foods she happens to want, even if those foods that she desires will cause a damage or potential life-threatening to the baby that she's carrying. Why? Because tsar gufa will come before, it seems, the life of the vlad. So how could these two gemaras both indicate that somebody's physical comfort precedes somebody else's life? So first answer is, well, it does. That's what it is. That's what the Beis Shmuel seems to understand when the Chalkas Mechokik challenged this gemara about how could we let the woman's comfort take precedence over the baby's life. But the other mahalchim in the Achrona was that, no, all these situations were scenarios where it's not really somebody else's comfort and somebody else's life at odds. The Shiltas explains that when we were talking about laundry, we weren't just talking about just doing laundry to feel good and to, have clean undershirts. It was whatever the situation was that also involved some kind of sakana. Maybe there was some disease that was being transferred through dirty clothing. I don't know what it was. So it was really one sakan, the sakan of the upper city versus the sakan of the lower city. Similarly, the Hafla says that no, it doesn't mean that the lower city should die instead of the upper city being not having water to wash their clothes. It means the lower city, if you don't have water to drink, so move away. Don't live where you live. Move somewhere else where there is water. But not that, of course, somebody's personal comfort will take precedence over another's life. Similarly, the Gemara in Ksuvis is explained the way to mean that there's some situation that if she didn't satisfy her craving, she would be in a sakana herself. That's why she's allowed to put her baby in sakana, or inversely, if it's not really a sakana for the baby, if she eats this, this Milky Way bar that she's craving, fine. That's in terms of the halachas of my comfort versus your sakana. Let's talk about body parts. The Radvaz, there are two truths in the Radvaz. One truth in the Radvaz says that he's talking about a shayla where a person's ear is to be cut off potentially, and the Radvaz says that you don't have to have your ear cut off to save somebody else's life. Even if somebody else is going to be killed, if your ear remains there, you don't have to have it cut off. Also, he has a very beautiful svar, no pun intended, t'racha adache noam. It's not Torah, it's not pretty. From the Torah perspective, it's not pretty to have ears cut off, body parts cut off. So you don't have to give off body parts to change. The Torah should never make you chop off your body part. Therefore, if you certainly know chiyuv, says the Radvaz, and if you do, let your ear get cut off, or even save somebody else, then you're chassid shota. So, machlok is if chassid shota means if it's also to do, it's just not smart to do. Nevertheless, then we come to the question of that the Igros Moshe shows that when you have a let's say your person's going to lose a limb. Right, a person's going to lose a limb to save somebody else. What is the status of giving up that limb? Could a chiyuv d'oraisa or a lo sase d'oraisa be mechayev me to sacrifice my limb? So we know that a lo sase d'oraisa is, as we mentioned 3 minutes ago, mechayev me to lose kol mamoni. Igros Moshe, though, points out that there is something worse than losing all of your money. There can be something worse than that. And the example that he gives was the seeing a relative. I think he brought a Gemara that said that seeing a relative be killed was worse than losing your money, and therefore there are certain kulas that the Gemara gives, not for losing all your money, but yes for a person seeing their relative be killed. Based on that, Rav Moshe proves, since there is something that is more chomer than losing all your money, so what's the shear of how much you have to spend on a lo sase? Only a certain amount is too low. You only have to spend until ad kol mamonu, and not more than that. And giving up a limb is more than that, and therefore you would not be obligated to give up your limbs, even though to not violate lo sama l'damayach, even though you would be obligated to give up kol mamonu. Now let's talk about donations more practically. First of all, whenever we talk about a donation in any regard, whether it's blood, bone marrow, or a kidney or body part, the shaila of the lo sasei, of lo sama damriach, will only come in if the chola is lefanecha. If the chola is not lefanecha, it's a beautiful idea, great idea, maybe, maybe not, but there's no chiyuv whatsoever. The only time you can even talk about a chiyuv, the only time there's a concept of lo sama damriach, that could be binding, would be where there is a chola bifanecha. And therefore, if a person is, for example, donating to a blood bank, there can't be any chiyuv, even of lo sama l'damriyacha, even if we were to say that there is a mitzvah. But if it's for a direct donation to a specific individual, then we could get into the shaila, is there a chiyuv of lo sama l'damriyacha that would obligate me to enter this uncomfortable situation of donating my blood? So, the way Rabbi Shabtai suggested is that, on one hand, based on what we said from Ramosha's Tshuva, that I don't have to, there are things, I don't have to give up a body part for lo sama l'damriyacha. What's the status of blood? What's the status, and similarly, with the way they do bone marrow transplants now, where they don't actually remove the bone marrow, they just pump up with an injection, they pump up the levels of stem cells in your bloodstream, and again, they're just taking out blood, the stem cells from your blood supply, so it ends up that the modern way of doing bone marrow transplants is through blood, just like a blood donation is with blood. So in both of those cases, the way Dr. Shabtai understood, since the tzar that you endure, is it, let's try to, on a scale, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, is it tzar that's less than giving up all of your wealth, as much as giving up all of your wealth, or more than giving up all of your wealth? If it would be more than giving up all of your wealth, you wouldn't be obligated to do it. The chiv of lo sama l'damriyacha doesn't extend so far, does not extend so far, has to undergo an extreme tzar, but giving blood or having the Neupogen injection, giving the stem cells from your blood, that's not so terrible, worse than giving up all of your wealth. So therefore, it probably would be less than the amount of giving up the amount of kol mamono. And theoretically, maybe you should be mechuyav, again, if it would be a direct donation, in both blood donations and in marrow donations. However, the question is, if we decide that a blood is a part of your body, well, the Radvaz told us that you don't have to give up your body to save somebody else. Similarly, Sternberg says that a part of your body is chiyuso. You're not obligated to give up a part of your body. Rabbi Blaise, however, says that anything that's regenerative, how could you say, I don't have to give up my body part to save somebody else? What do you mean? It's your body part? Yeah, but in 4 days, you'll have that body part again. It's regenerative, like both bone marrow as well as blood itself. So therefore, Bleich holds that, again, if there would be a chole b'fanecha, you would be mechuyev mi d'oraisa because of l'sal l'dam riacha, to give that bone marrow or that blood donation. But of course, the Rebbe Leich says, no one told you in the first place that you have to get tested l'chatchila. There's no chiyuv to test l'chatchila because there's no chola b'fanecha. Once you are tested for whatever reason, and they call you that you're a match, according to Rebbe Leich, since this is not a part of your body because it's regenerative, Rebbe Leich would hold there would be a chiyuv. Rav Schechter is unsure whether that fact that it will regenerate makes it, oh, it's not like a regular part of your body. But clearly, if you have to give a part of your body, that there would be no chiyuv to do. Are you allowed to give part of your body? Well, we have the Radvaz, the second Radvaz. Besides the Radvaz who says they don't have to give part of your bodies away because of Dracha Derechei Noam, there's another Radvaz who talks about levels of risk, that if a risk is less than 50%, then you are obligated to enter that risk to save somebody else. If the risk is above 50% of endangering yourself, then there will be no chiyuv of lo samod adam riacha. So then you have to sort of analyze what the risk rate of organ donation is, and according to if the risk is lower than 50%, which in our, you know, the practical donation that we do nowadays, it's definitely less than 50%. So you'd think, according to this Radvaz, you'd have to donate. However, the other Radvaz that says that you don't have to donate because you don't have to give up your body, that might be talking about where there's a higher risk. The Tzitz Eliezer comes out with, depends if you want to call it a kula or chumra, that should be asur to give a donation of a body part. And that is because you're not allowed to be nichnas and suffix sakana to save somebody else from vaday sakana. And therefore, when you, oh, he said, but it's not really a sakana. Everyone, you know, 95% of the, you know, donors are fine. But no, when the person, the donor, is opened up on the operating table to take out the organ from him, at that moment, you're right, of course, the surgeon who opened you plans on closing you up again also. But at that moment that you're opened up to donate that organ, at that moment, you entered that situation of being opened up, which is a tremendous sakana. And therefore, you never had to get yourself in, you're not mechuyev to get into that situation of being open, even though they're going to close you. But that situation being open is a sakana that you're not obligated to enter, you're asur to enter. So, halacha l'maisa, there's a machlokas, no one says you're obligated to give a body part. Machlokas, it's permitted or not permitted. But even, those who say it's permitted, it's definitely a mitzvah to do. But your wife has the right to be mocha because she could always claim, Adam Shalem, I married an Adam Shalem and I want a full person, not a 94% husband. That's the halachas of donating blood. Let's talk about the three-part series by Rabbi Sabalevsky of Hilchos Shabbos. We'll start with the sugya of Zmanei Hayom. Just has three or four parts. We start with a question. When is Shkia, or better yet, when is Laila, or better yet, when is Ben Hashmashos? So we have a contradiction between two Gemaras. One Gemara says that from Gemara and Shabbos, that between Shkia and Seis is 3/4 of a meal. A meal is 2,000 amas. So assuming that a meal is 18 minutes, so 3/4 of 18 minutes is going to be 13.5 minutes. Consequently, Shkia comes, that's the ball of fire goes down below the horizon, that Shkia, 13.5 minutes later, according to this Gemara, Laila has arrived. So Ben HaShemash was 13.5 minutes between Shkia, sunset, and Laila, l'chol davar, mida araisa, in every which way, in every respect. The problem is there's a Gemara elsewhere in Pesachim that says that sunsets only after that Laila is 4 mil after the setting of the sun. So how do we reconcile? Is it 13.5 minutes, or is it 4 mil? 4 times 18 minutes is 72 minutes. Is it 13.5 minutes, or 72 minutes after Shkia? So there are two Mahalchim, of course, that of the Rambam, the Gaonim, what we'll call Shitas Hagra, who says that there's only one operative Gemara. The Gemara of 4 mil, that's Agadita. That the Gemara wants you to know when it's Laila, when all the stars are out, for no halachic significant reason. But the halacha is the other Gemara in Shabbos that's significant, and therefore Laila is 13.5 minutes after sunset. That's been how we always saw. That's what we have followed for... let's stop there. One more shita, the second way to resolve the answer, which is that of Rabbeinu Tam, and the Shulchan Aruch paskens this way, that Shkia does not happen when the ball goes below the horizon. That's Yom Mamish. Shkia Taka says, as the Gemara in Psachim says, 72 minutes, let me rephrase that, Seis happens 72 minutes after the sun goes down, and the 13 and a half minutes before that Seis of 72 minutes, in other words, 58 minutes and a half after the first Shkia, that's when Ben HaShemashas begins. So what, according to Rabbeinu Tam, what do you have? You have sunset, which is halakhically insignificant. 58 and a half minutes later, you have what we call Shkia Shnia. That's the beginning of Ben HaShemashos. How long is Ben HaShemashos? 13 and a half minutes. And then, when you get to 72 minutes after the original Shkia, that's Laila L'chol Davar. So you just come out with a very funny situation that, let's say, half, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes after Shkia, according to the Gra, it is Laila Gomer. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it is Yom Gomer. We, of course, follow the Gra, and therefore, once Shkia comes, we assume that it's Shabbos, so we don't have Mincha after the Shkia. Give or take a few minutes, and we should schedule, as Rabbanim, we should schedule all the tefillos in the shul, and Shal HaShuris, and for Nida, Hefzik Taras should be before Shkia, Mincha should finish before Shkia. That's the first point of the Shir regarding when is Shkia and Seis. Second point is the mitzvah of Tosefes Shalosh, which is going to be interconnected. The mitzvah of Tosefes presumably means, as the Ramban points out, you add on, we learn from Yom Kippur that you have to do Tosefes Midoraisa, and that is extended, presumably, to Shabbos and Yontif. But if that were to be the case, asks the Ramban, then you have to add on time before Shabbos begins, before Yontif begins. But asks the Ramban on the sheet of the Gra, how could you say that how could you say that since Ben HaShemashos is Safek Zman, before Ben HaShemashos is when Tosefes Yontif, Tosefes Shabbos has to be, in a time that's Vada Yom, that you're adding to what might be Laila. But there's a Mishnah, asks the Ramban, that says that you're allowed to do Malacha Im Shemesh. Meaning, it sounds like as long as the sun is out. It sounds like until what we call the regular Shkia. What about the Mitzvah Seder Raisa of Tosefes Shabbos? That should make you not be able to go Im HaShemesh. So based on this, Ramban proves the Gra wrong and says, according to the Gra, you'd have to stop doing Malacha at Shkia, then you'd never be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos, which obligates, because the Mishnah tells you that you're allowed to go until, you're allowed to do Malacha till Shkia. So therefore, Rabbeinu Tam must be right, and therefore, according to Rabbeinu Tam, the way that Tosefes would work is once the sun sets, that's the time that you're allowed to start doing Tosefes Shabbos, and of course, you're bound by Safek Laila at the second Shkia, which will be 58 and a half minutes later. The Gra, however, has a different way out of this problem that there's a Mishnah against, and that sounds like you could do Malacha right until Shkia, despite there being a mitzvah of Tosefes. So either he'll understand that Im HaShemesh, the Mishnah says that you could go with your Malacha till Shemesh, doesn't literally mean until Shkia, it means close to Shkia, not really Shkia. But the Gra himself says something more simply. You're right, there's a contradiction here. There's one Mishnah that says you have to do Tosefes, and yet the Gemara tells us, as I proved, as the Gra himself holds, that Shkia happens at sunset. And that's when Safek Laila is. And therefore the Gra knocks out entirely this mitzvah. He says there must not be such a mitzvah called Tosefes Shabbos and Tosefes Yom Tov. Because if there would be, then you would not be, then the Mishnah cannot say doing Malacha Im HaShemesh. Since the Mishnah says you do Malacha till HaShemesh, meaning until sunset, there's obviously no mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos. So therefore, according to the Gra, there's no chiyuv of Tosefes Shabbos at all. Of course, Yom Kippur, you have to start fasting early. That's where the source of Tosefes is, Yom Kippur. Next point, one tiny point, where does the concept of 18 minutes before Shkia for Hadlakas Neros come in? Perhaps it might come from the Shita of the Re'eim, Rav Elazar Mimetz, that who holds that Ben HaShemashos start, not that Ben HaShemashos starts at Shkia, but Ben HaShemashos starts the 13 and a half minutes of, the three quarters of a meal is not between what we have Shkia and Seis, but it's three quarters of a meal before Shkia. That's when Ben HaShemashos starts. So if you take the size of a meal, not what we were assuming of 18 minutes, but assuming the size of a meal of 24 minutes, so 3/4 of 24 minutes is going to be 18 minutes. And 18 minutes before Shkia would be the time that, according to Rabbi Elazar Mimetz, that's when Ben HaShemashos would start. So that might be a source for the 18 minutes. End of that point. Next discussion. Early Shabbos. We have a machlokas in Maseches Brachos until what time you're allowed to daven mincha. Machlokas Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda says you're allowed to daven until Plaga Mincha, let's assume on a day of 6 to 6. Plaga Mincha is an hour and a quarter earlier. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to daven mincha until 4:45 p.m. According to Chacham, you're allowed to daven until 6 p.m. How do we pasken? Whatever you want. You're allowed to choose which way you follow. That's how Tosfos paskens. David Kamara Avid or David Kamara Avid. But of course, Tosfos points out you have to pick one. You can't play games. You can't pick and choose who you're going to follow. If you want to always daven mincha until 4:45, great. You're allowed to start davening Marav every day at 4:46. If you want to daven mincha until 6 p.m., then you're allowed to start Marav every day at 6:01. However, when it comes to Shabbos, you're allowed to change who you hold like. Normally, I always daven mincha until Shkia on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But Friday, I want to daven mincha only till Plag and be able to daven Marav after Plag. There, the poskim say you're allowed to switch who you hold like. But even when you do switch who you hold like, within Friday itself, you can't have a stira minei ubei. You can't, at the same time, simultaneously, hold that I'm allowed to daven mincha after plaka mincha, meaning like chachamim until 6 o'clock, but I'm allowed to daven mariv before shkia, before 6 o'clock. You can't have a stira minei ubei. Therefore, the ideal way, of course, on Erev Shabbos, if you want to make an early Shabbos in your shul, is to have a mincha and marav that straddle plag. Mincha will be finished before plag and mincha by 4:45, and after 4:45, you'll have your, again on a 6 to 6 day, you'll have your kabbal Shabbos, your marav. Those are the main points from the Zman Hayom Shir. The rest of the Shir talked about different times that you should, how to schedule your meals. In the morning, you're not supposed to be fasting before until Chatzos, and it's good to have a Suda, the Suda Shni should be in the daytime. Those are smaller points. The next shiur we'll talk about is Rabbi Savlovsky's shiur about caring for children on Shabbos. So the first point that was discussed is nursing. Nursing, Be'etzem, should be an Issa D'oraisa of Dash, similar to Bara, because you're taking the milk from where it is, and that should be Nasa Dereis. It happens to be that since it's done Derech Achila, through nursing, that is considered, that is Mutter, because Derech Achila. But otherwise, it would be pumping, if it wouldn't be into the baby's mouth, it would be into a pump. That should be Disha Mida Araisa, just like milking a cow on Shabbos should be Asa Mida Araisa. So that's great for the baby, because we could give the baby formula if we don't, again, if the baby's not nursing, want to feed it, so we're not going to pump the milk from the mother, we'll give the baby formula. But what about the mother who might be in a lot of pain because of the pressure of the milk that's not being allowed out? So what we'll have to do is we'll have to knock down the Isur D'oraisa of Disha down to an Isur D'rabbanan. And therefore, if it will only be a D'rabbanan, we'll be maturit b'makom tsar. How do you knock it down? Disha D'oraisa will be knocked down by making the product, the milk that comes out, go le'ibud, be wasted. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, if the milk is wasted, it becomes a melacha she'ena tzrich l'gufa, because you're not getting the milk from your disha, and therefore you'd be able to pump, with a manual pump, into a garbage can, or into what they usually use is a little bit of detergent or dishwashing liquid, dishwashing soap they'll put on the bottom of the pump, and therefore the milk will go into dishwashing soap, and it's not usable for a baby to eat. That'll be le'ibud, it'll be Issa D'rabbanan b'makom tsar, which will be mutter. If there's an electric pump that is to be used, that will be a different question in terms of asking a guy to use. B'makom tsar, we might permit it, or a Shabbos klach, we'll talk about in a few minutes. But under any circumstance, milk cannot be pumped in any way that will save the milk, period, under all circumstances. Next point in the shir is how to make children's oatmeal. So the main problem with children's oatmeal is probably not an Isser of Bishul, because First of all, if you do it in Kli Shlishi, then according to Moshe, Kli Shlishis are not Mevashel. Mishpur is Machmir, by the way. They know that there's no such thing as a Kli Shlishi. That's what Mishpur says, you need tea essence. But the children still, you actually don't need hot water at all. Cold water works totally fine. The problem is that of lush, you're making a mush. That's the best definition of the word lush, mush. So how do we make cereal if I'll be over the Isser of lush? So the halacha is, by lush, that if you do a shinui kala'acha yad, that's going to make, a shinui, you're doing it with kala'acha yad, that's going to make lush mutter. But what is lush? When are you going to do your shinui? There's machlokes, tanaim, what the moment of the Isser lush is. Is the moment of Isser of lush the nesinas hamayim? Or is the moment of Isser actually gabel, the actual kneading, the actual making it into, mushing it into a mush? So if the moment is the nesinas hamayim, so you're going to have to do a shinui, make a kila'acha yad, in that moment. If the true answer is that the moment of lush is with a kneading, so you're going to have to do with a mixing, you're going to have to do a shinui kila'acha yad at that moment of kneading, of mixing. Well, which one is which? Which is it? So it's machlokas. We're machmir taka, to be machmir that both, we're not sure which is the right time of the moment of lush, the moment of the iser. And therefore we're machmir for both shitos, and therefore we need a double shinui. We're going to need a shinui not only at the zman of the nesinas hamayim. How do you do a shinui? How do you do a shinui at the time of nesinas hamayim? I guess the only thing that we have is do it the opposite of the way you always do it during the week. If normally you put in cereal and then add water, so on Shabbos, put water and then add the cereal. Some people say do it opposite the way it says on the box. It's a little bit schwer. Second time that might be the Isser of the moment of lush is the kneading, the mixing. So you have to do a shini there. How do you do a shini there? Well, there you could mix it with your finger. Perhaps mix it, if you normally go in a circle, do crisscrosses. The Chazon Ish says that if you do crisscrosses, it's not enough just to go back and forth. You have to lift your finger out each time. So that's the shini. But even with all these shinuis, there's still another problem. Because some say that Lisha Midaraisa is not solved by doing a kila'acha yad with a shinui, but only Lisha Midarabanan. What's the scenario that's Lisha Daraisa versus Darabanan? Whether it's a blila ava or a blila raka. So if you add a lot of water, it will be a blila raka, then it will only be Lisha Midarabanan, and then you could all use all these kulas. So what do we have? We want to make our stroller for the baby. We have to do all the following clues. First of all, make sure there's a lot of water. So that's only a din derabbanan, Lisha derabbanan of Lila Raka. Secondly, change the order of water versus putting in stroller into the bowl. Thirdly, do a shinui in the mixing itself, which is, let's say, finger back and forth as a crisscross instead of a circle. And, of course, like the Chazon Ish, lift the finger out each time. All is said and done, it's the kulas. It's a little bit, it's not the most ideal situation. Therefore, if you wanted to make yourselves oatmeal on Shabbos, again, using a shlishi, let's assume that doesn't mevashel, let's let you hold like Igros Moshe, if you want to make yourself oatmeal, so there's no bishul because it's shlishi. But what is there? There's lush. Oh, we figured out a solution to lush, didn't we? Lamaisa, this whole kula is a little bit shaky, so therefore, the tzarech katan, the katan has a din of cholah, we will be making with all these kulas of lush. But for yourself, then we would not rely on all these kulas in Hilchas Lisha to make yourself oatmeal on Shabbos. That's so good. Next discussion. Tochen, making a salad. Here we're talking about babies, so cutting up vegetables very small or chicken very small for the baby. So cutting vegetables very small is an Isser D'Oraisa of Tochen. How small is small? Says Rabbi Lezer Mimetz, cited by Mishro, we don't know. So therefore, well, make sure they're not small. What about the following kula? We know that by Borer, there's a kula that if you do a la'alter, immediately before the Suda, that's called Derech Achila, not Derech Malacha, and therefore it's mutter to do Borer, and therefore it's mutter to be Borer in whatever way, if it's immediately before the Achila. The Rashba takes that concept from Borer and transposes it onto the halacha of Tochen and says, just like Borer, la'alter could be done, so to Tochen, if it's immediately before the meal, that will be okay. The Ramah happens to be making like this Rashba, and therefore you could do it right before the meal, immediately before the meal. You could cut it up and do tochein right before the meal, because that's considered derech achila. However, despite the Ramah's kula, the Shabrua, the Chazanish, do not like this Ramah, and therefore one should avoid cutting some very small pieces and cut them big enough that it's surely not considered a small piece, even though we don't really know how big that is. The second part of this point is mashing bananas. For whatever reason, the Chazon Ish understood that mashed banana, this is not only tochein, this is mamish tochein midaraisa. If you mash a banana with a fork on Shabbos, you're mamish chayev skila. Ramosha points out that, what do you mean? Mashing a banana is not cutting things small. Tochein is cutting, chopping it up, like grinding flour. You're grinding it something up to small particles. Mashing a banana is just, that's not tochein. Anyway, that's what the Chazon Ish is machmir, that's asur deraisa. But the Chazon Ish who gives that chumra also gives you a kula. I'm sorry, let me add one point. The Chazon Ish, while saying that it's asur deraisa to mash the banana, he says also that whole kula of the Rash that we mentioned, that if you do something immediately before the Seuda, that's derech achila, that only applies to tochein midrabanan, but not tochein deraisa like grinding wheat or, says the Chazon Ish, smushing a banana. So therefore it would be asur, even some of the Seuda, one would never be able to smush a banana. But, even though he gives you that chumra, the Chazon Ish says, if you do this mushing of a banana, kilachayad, that would be mutter gamra. So, the Igros Moshe, although he doesn't understand why it should be tochen in the first place, because you're not making it into small pieces, you're mushing it, but he says, okay, but if lamaisa, I'll be machmir in honor of the Chazon Ish's chumra, but we're not going to go further than the Chazon Ish himself went. The Chazon Ish himself said that once it's kilachayad, it will be mutter, even though it's a daraisa, so therefore, if you mush your bananas kilachayad, that will be mutter lechatchila. Next point, talked about warming up milk in a bottle, klisheni versus klishlishi. The Igros Moshe we mentioned earlier says you're allowed to warm things up in a klishlishi. The Mishabru, the Chazon Ish, says there's no such thing called a klishlishi in halacha. But of course, the whole issur of warming milk up is that the milk will get to Yad Soled Espo, which is dangerous, usually. Actually, not so much, because we're machmer that Yad Soled Espo is quite cool. 110 degrees is already Yad Soled Espo. That's not hot in any, you know, in any shape or form. Or putting all spishel is also a problem, not just if it's going to reach Yad Soled Espo, but it's put in a place where it potentially could reach Yad Soled Espo. So if you normally make tea in your klishlishi, you could also warm the baby milk in a klishlishi. If the baby milk was already cooked, for example, it's a powder formula, a powder which is pre-cooked, or milk which is pasteurized, and therefore it's pre-cooked, you're allowed to warm it up in a klisheni. Because anything that has already been mevushel is allowed to be warmed up in a klisheni. That's one point. Next point. Diaper changing. So there are two issues. First of all, schita, and then the diapers itself. In terms of baby wipes, squeezing out, of course, could be an issue. If you take a sponge or something that's wet and you squeeze it to get the water out of it, that could be an issue daraisa, either of kibus or of kibus and libun. But that's only if it's absorbed in the material and you're squeezing it out. If it's just liquid that's on the surface of the material, that doesn't constitute kibus or libun. But that's just a machlokas in the metzias of our Rosh Yeshiva, whether diaper wipes are actually the liquid inside the wipe or on the surface of the wipe. I did notice this past week, as I was changing my baby, that at the bottom, when you get to the last few wipes in the package, they're much more saturated than the top wipes in the package. Because I guess the water goes towards the bottom of the package, and there's a little, not a pool, but there's more liquid on the bottom, and I definitely think that, again, I use Kirkland. Costco has the best baby wipes that there are because you don't have to worry about any perforations and they're also strong. So definitely, even if you can make it to use wipes and you hold that it's not schita and you don't have to, and we don't have to use spritz, but if you get to the bottom of the package, be very, very, very aware that there's a lot of liquid in the bottom wipes and that might, the holiday is being issur daraisa, which is something to be concerned with. Next point in changing is what about using the diapers itself? And that's an issue because the Rambam says that Korea, and its inverse, tofer, not only applies by strings and threads, but also to be medabik niyaros is similar to tofer, and be mafrid niyaros is similar to korea. So Velcro is fine, nothing to talk about. That's not an adhesive, that's just interlocking. It's like playing Lego. That's what Velcro is. Just interlocking things that interlock just on a very small, not microscopic, but on a very small level. The problem might be adhesive tabs that some brands have. So what's the issue? The issue is, do we say, we know that the halachas of kosher is only if it's a kosher shel kayama. So will we say that so too tofer is also only if it's a tefira shel kayama, and therefore if I'm only tofer, you know, for I put my baby, my diaper on my baby before he goes to sleep, and then the next morning when he wakes up, I'm going to change his diaper. I hope I don't change the baby. I'm going to change the diaper. So it was just a tofer for the evening. I had tofer just for 8 or 12 hours. So it's not shel kayama. So that's a machlokas. The Rama brings both deos, whether tofer that's not shel kayama, short-term tofer, if that's still tofer, which is the fact that Rama brings both shitas, sounds like Mikra Din, he's matir, but he wants you to be machmir, he wants you to be, you know, he's not so into people doing it, that's why he's bringing the tzad, lachmir. So, when you take the diaper off, that's definitely showing that the tofer was not shel kayama. But sometimes when you have a dirty diaper, what do? Especially if it's a dirty, dirty diaper, you sort of seal it back up again. There, you get yourself into a very serious problem, because there, you, after you seal it up, you're sealing it up for posterity. It's going to be dumped down the chute or out to the garbage, go to the landfill with that seal forevermore. So that is really shel kayama, so that should be avoided. So again, after you change the diaper, the tabs should not be closed. You should leave it unclosed so that you won't have that tofer shel kayama. In terms of not tofer, but korea is taking the tabs unadhering, thank you, the adhesive, that might also not be considered shel kayama because the manufacturer, even though they've been that way for 3 months between the time it left the Pampers factory and got to Rite Aid and got into your house and until you actually use it, might have been a few months, that's shel kayama, isn't it? So some say, and therefore I should not be able to open those adhesives at all to even put it on my baby. So some suggest that since the manufacturer made it with the express intention of undoing the adhesive, that would also be considered a temporary taking apart something that was temporarily put together. It's not shel kayama, and that would be a tzad l'hakel. Something that's very nogel l'maisa is ointments for diaper rashes or for anything else. And there is an iser of memareach or memachek of smoothing the ointments onto a body. So that's aser. But however, since a baby has a din of a chola, certainly a baby with a diaper rash has a double din of a chola, so we permit doing this kila achar yad. How do you do that? You just apply the ointment to plop it on, or you put on the diaper, you just put it in a plop, in a just a big little, what's the word?
Glob,
that's the word, thank you. Yes, you put it on a glob, and then as the baby moves around in its diaper, it will shmir itself. That will be kila achar yad, and that will be mutter on Shabbos. In terms of where there's no Erev, next point, where there's no Erev, so Chai Noseis Atzma is very nice on a Daraisa level, but it's still Asa Drabonon to carry a Chai. And also Chai Noseis Atzma will only apply if the baby knows how to walk. So if your baby's in a carriage, there's nothing to talk about. And if a baby can't walk yet, sometimes you have babies who are 3 years old who can't walk, but they still go place in carriages. But if a baby can't walk, so of course no Chai Noseis Atzma. And if a baby can walk, it's still Asa Drabonon. So what happens if you're coming home from shul and your 3-year-old just sits down on the sidewalk or worse yet in the crosswalk and says, I'm not going anywhere? So here you'd be able to ask a goy to carry, again in a place where there's no Erev, you'd be able to get a goy because Amir Lenachri will be permitted by Makom Chola. Choli and the katan is always considered to be Makom Choli, especially if he's crying, certainly if he's in the crosswalk, but that might have other heterim. Especially if their car is coming quickly. If there's no goy to ask to carry the baby home, to carry the toddler home, Again, babies you shouldn't have gotten out in the first place. Tali, you tried, thought you'd make it. So you know, he was one step ahead of you. If no other option, you could do it pachas pachas. You could waddle the baby pachas pachas midal ramas. Sort of waddle them 3 feet, or carry them 3 feet, and wait a little bit. Another three amas, I mean not feet, but amas. But obviously you should be smart, and if you have a child of that age that this is a risk, or has that personality type, just you shouldn't be taking him out on Shabbos, if there's no Erev. Two more points. If there's an injury, then of course, pikuach nefesh is pikuach nefesh. Anything that needs stitches, Rabbi Sobolowski suggested that you could be, if it's serious enough that it needs stitches, it's serious enough that you have to be concerned about an infection setting in, and that would have a din of pikuach nefesh again. But there, again, for the pikuach nefesh concern, don't drive yourself. Get a guy to drive to the hospital if there would be that infection concern. You should drive only if it's a matter of life and death, you know, with based on time, meaning an infection is also a matter of life and death, but you might have 3 weeks for that. So get a guy to drive. If there's no sakana nefasho, so then you can do any amir lanachri that you want, and that applies, this halacha is not to do with children, but amir lanachri is mutter, the makam chola she'en bo sakana, the first child that I got when I became the rabbi here in Schenck, was I became the rabbi on Yom Kippur. That was my first time. And as a woman was walking up the steep steps of the shul on the outside, those of you who are familiar with the building, there are steep steps there, she twisted her ankle badly and wanted to know if we could get security to drive her home. So this, I spoke to Rabbi Schechter about it. I didn't have the answer at that time, but when I discussed it with Schechter, so yeah, this is a chol she'en bo sakana. Schechter understands a chol she'en bo sakana is anyone, even though the Gemara says Nafal Mishka, but Rosh Hechter, I think maybe based on Soloveitchik, has the understanding that means anyone who's not functioning normally. So somebody has a badly twisted ankle, they're certainly not functioning normally. So anyone on crutches, for example, would be presumably in that category, perhaps. Chol Hashem Basakana, Amir Lenachri is Mutter 100%. So we could tell the non-Jewish security guard, please drive this woman to her house. Without no rimazim, just straight amir lanachri, which is mutter b'makom choli. So a child is also, certainly if he's sick, if he's not sick, not sure, but a child, certainly if he's sick, a little, even a little tiny bit sick, is always considered chol she'en bo sakana. Therefore, amir lanachri is mutter for any health-related issues relating to your child. So if you want to ask a maid or a cleaning person, or if you have a non-Jewish babysitter, to put the ointment on and just tell the mamash, prepare, shmir ointment on my baby. That would be fine. That would probably be even better than doing kalachayad yourself. What about other drabbanans? So here we have, other than amil nachri, so kalachayad will also be okay. But here we have machlokas where the kalachayad is mutter, again, b'makom choli, chol she'en bo sakana, that you do kalachayad, there, it's mutter, but it's a machlokas, so it's mutter only by an isidra banan or even by an isidra raisa. The Ramban apparently says that it's only mutter on isidra banan, but Rosh Shlomo Zalman paskins that kila'acha yad is mutter b'makom chol even on an isidra raisa, and therefore, again, if a child is uncomfortable, a child is a little bit sick, that's a din of cholash she'en bo sakana, and therefore it's a machlokas, whether you could do something kila'acha yad is a drabanan. Shaila, if you could do this drabanan machlokas, if this leniency of this isur drabanan of kilachayad for the chola is only b'makom isur drabanan, only b'makom, or even by an isur daraisa. So if it's a shas adchak, you could rely on those from Mekel, on Rav Shlomo Zalman, and therefore do a malacha kilachayad b'makom choli. Lemaisa, the best example is if you need to turn on a nebulizer for a child, you could turn it on. On Shabbos, again, if there's no goy around, b'shinu with your elbow, kalachayad, you can turn on a nebulizer, kalachayad, welcome choli for a child.
A nebulizer,
sometimes children have a hard time breathing, so sometimes it could be either medicated or not medicated. It sends a mist. It's like you turn it on for 5 minutes, it sends a mist of usually the medicine into the nose. And that clears up their system. Okay. The final point in childcare, And then we'll have one more shiur after that, just electricity after that. The final point in childcare is, what about your kid doing malacha? So it's a mishnah that you have to tell your child not to do malacha. You're obligated that your child not to do malacha. If your child does malacha, you're obligated to stop him. That's a mishnah. What about doing this in drabbanan? So could you get your kid to do this in drabbanan? In other words, in French, are you allowed to be machil katan biyadayim or safinan lay biyadayim and isu drabbanan? So the Rambam says that, well, just like a daraisa you're not allowed to give him, or even let him do, so to an isu drabbanan you're not allowed to. Why? Because the isu drabbanan is called the tikkun rabbanan, okay, daraisa tikkun. You can't let him do an isu daraisa. You can't let him do, or certainly tell him to do an isu drabbanan as well. The Rashba, however, distinguishes as follows. He has a chiluk that if it's a tovas hagadol, then you cannot ask him to do it, even if the isur involves only nisa drabbanan. But if it's a tovas hakatan, you may ask a katan to do an isur drabbanan with tovas hakatan. How do we pass? So again, we have machlokas rishon, and the Rambam says it's asur, even to tell him to do an isur drabbanan. The Rashba says it's mutter to tell him to do an isur drabbanan, at least if it's a tovas hakatan. How do we paskin? So again, if it's a shas hadchak, you can rely on the Rashba and tell the katan to do a malacha that will be litzarech hakatan. So for example, we'll talk about this a little bit more in depth in a moment, electricity, let's say turning off a light is drabanan, and it's going to be hard for him, not you, for him to go to sleep, you can tell the katan, turn off the light, because you're telling him to do an isa drabanan, litovas hakatan, that would be okay. That's what should come out. Finally, the last shiur we'll discuss today is Rabbi Sadlowski's shiur on the last electricity. Yes? I think if you have an option between a guy and your child, it's probably better to have a guy do it. I don't recall 100%, but if I remember, those halachas are very nogeh by pregnant women going to the hospital on Shabbos. And you have options of how to, it's not, you have to get there, but it doesn't have to be immediately. Have to get them within the next hour or two, but you're going to have to violate Shabbos. How should you do it? So I think it's always better to ask a guy than asking your child, or your child is the worst to ask, because you're mitzuvah midaraisa on shvisas beno. So if you're going to ask a child, it should be asking a different child, or asking your neighbor to ask your child, not asking your own child.
To call an
ambulance, or to call a car service. Yeah.
Good luck having your child call an ambulance.
No, a 10-year-old. Yeah, a 10-year-old could definitely call 911. Or, you know, or any number. my son was off from school last week. Oh, yeah, it was on Thursday, during contemporary halacha. So I sat him in a room. I turned on some Berenstain Bears videos for him. And I was here with you guys, and I gave him my phone in case he wanted to. So I figured if there's a problem, he'll call my wife. And my wife told him that he was just nervous the whole time, so just calling back and forth the whole time, driving her crazy. So he's 8 years old, so 8 year olds can make phone calls. Yes. Okay, so let's start the halachas of electricity on Shabbos. We're going to add a few points to what Rabbi Sadlowski said. First of all, let's start with the simpler and easier discussion. That is, what is the status of an electric lamp? An incandescent bulb that has a filament that gets heated up and glows and gives off light. So here we have a Gemara. The Gemara says that if you extinguish a metal gacheles, a gacheles shamateches, if you extinguish it, it's asur derabanan. But since it's only asur derabanan, b'malkam hezek, there's a glowing coal on the floor right outside the base of matters, somebody that fell off the lantern place. So there, b'malkam hezek, you're allowed to put it out, b'malkam hezek. Why is it only asur derabanan? Kibui is asur derais, isn't it? So here we have machlokas rishonim, why extinguishing a gacheles shamateches is only derabanan. Some say that it's a gacheles, as opposed to a piece of wood, or a piece of paper, is not or oil, is not consumed. So therefore, it's not considered esh. If we would say that, so then a filament is not consumed. It takes, I don't know, 5,000 hours to be consumed. Filament is not consumed. Therefore, a filament would not be Aish. And if it's not Esh, there's no Isur Kibui. But unfortunately, Rashi and the Rambam don't say that. Rashi and the Rambam say the reason why it's only Asur D'Rabbanan to put that Gacheles Shomatechas out is because Kibui is Midoraisa only when you're doing Letzorach Kufa to create Pechamim, to create coal. But otherwise, it really is regular Kibui. It's just you're doing the Kibui not for Pechamim purpose, you're doing Kibui for some other purpose. So if it's Melach Shein Tzuich L'Gufa. But otherwise, Rashi is clearly holding that it is Eish. It ought to be Kibui. There's just Halach in Kibui that if you don't do it a certain way, it's not going to be Kibui Doraisa. But what were you dealing with? You're dealing with an Eish. Just a question of how to put it out. Putting it out will be Doraisa, won't be Doraisa. But it is Eish. The Rashi says that it's Eish. The Rambam says that it's Eish. So Halach L'maisa, we have both Rashi and the Rambam. This is the accepted Halacha, that heating a piece of metal so that it glows, otherwise known as turning on a light bulb, filament of a light bulb, will be an Isser Midoraisa. Perhaps that should have that might be a cooler for Havdalah, maybe it could be considered Eish. There might be other problems with a light bulb for Eish. We'll look into that now. Of course, turning off a light bulb, even if we assume that it is Eish, as we just saw from Rashi and the Rambam, in the way they prove that it is Eish, by the fact that turning it off is, you have to come on to Melacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, so if you want to turn off a light bulb, that will, of course, be an only Nesed Rabbanan, because, or if when you want to, whether you're dimming it or turning it off, because since you're dimming it, you're turning it off not to save, to get yourself coal, but rather just to, I don't know, to save electricity, or because you want it dark in the room, that's not Tzrich L'Gufa, and therefore it will only be Nesed Rabbanan to turn off a light, even an incandescent light bulb. That's as far as light bulbs goes, as far as filaments go. What about electricity without light bulbs? Here, Rabbi Sabalowski mentioned two problems. We'll mention a few more. The Chazon Ish says that when you create an electrical circuit, that's bona. What is this based on? The Gemara in Shabbos says if you take a blade, put on a handle, make a shovel, that if you really make a kli, that is going to be bona. What do you mean? But isn't there Mount Zomer in the Gemara says ain binyan bekalim? So some say, yeah, that's another shita. That doesn't go according to this Gemara that says that it's a problem to make a kli. Others say, no. Even if you hold ain binyan bekalim, but there will be binyan bekalim if you're bona kli mitchi lasa. And therefore the Chazon Ish says when you take a vacuum cleaner that's not plugged in and you plug it in, you're taking something absolutely useless, absolutely purposeless and lifeless, devoid of anything, and giving it, making it a vacuum cleaner. And therefore, by plugging it in, you are as though being bona kli mitchilasa. If you don't like that svara, because what do you mean it's not bona kli mitchilasa? You had a vacuum cleaner, it's just missing the electricity. So says the Chazon Ish, even if you argue that it's already built, and it's not mitchilasa, we still will say, although we say ein binyan bekelim, but yesh binyan b'mechubar l'karka, if you're going to plug it into the wall, so it will now be mechubar. By plugging in, you're doing a binyan by being mechabrit to the karka, and that will be binyan, b'mechubar l'karka, that will be bona. Of course, if this is correct, then electricity, in all forms of electricity on Shabbos, will constitute an Isser Midoraisa. Shlomo Zalman, though, argued on the Chazon Ish and said that, how could you call this binyan? After all, the Ramah, the Shas Tshuvas, talks about closing and opening doors. And the Ramah says, why is closing and opening a door not binyan? And here it's talking about mechubar. Because the Ramah says, that's not called binyan, that's called derech ishtamshus. When you turn something on, when you open and close something, that's not bona, being bona then, that's being mishtamish for something. And therefore, Rosh Hashanah says, when you plug it in or unplug it or turn an electricity on or off, that's a hishtamshus of the kli, not an asiya of the kli. And therefore, it will not constitute bona. So if it's not bona, what other possibilities might it be? So the Beis Yitzchak suggested that it would be an Isser Drabanan of Nolad or Molid. Shaila, what Nolad and Molid are, which one is the Isser? It's Machlokes Rishonim. Nolad just means that the result that you have is something that's Muksa because you didn't have this before, so that's called Nolad. Molid means not worrying about a result, but you can't do an act of creating something that wasn't here before. So since this fan or this vacuum cleaner was purposeless, by you giving it purpose by plugging it in, by turning it on, that is either making something useful and that's it will be mukta, or the act of doing it is being molid, and that will also be asa. But that's only asa d'rabbana. A number of other possible suggestions that have been raised for what constitutes electricity that Rabbi Yisabas did not mention because he didn't have time was makeh b'patish. If you have a vacuum cleaner again, it doesn't work. What do? Just click the switch. That's going to be the makeh b'patish and make it work. And if it's makeh b'patish, that should be an iser midaraisa because makeh b'patish is daraisa. So this suggestion that it's makeh b'patish because you're making it gain its function was rejected also by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach because makeh b'patish is only when you put the finishing touches on something and make it into it. And now it's that forever. But if suddenly you turn on and off, on and off, and on and off, and off, that's not going to constitute a makeh b'patish. And secondly, Rav Shlomo Zalman rejected this consideration of makeh b'patish because makeh b'patish is something that you do a big act, a big maisa, a permanent, hard, something that involves effort, a big bang, a big something or other, but a little flick of a switch, that's not enough effort expended to be mugdar sufficiently as makeh b'patish. Another suggestion over the generations of the problem of electricity, which nowadays, as you can imagine, is not so much an issue, especially with more modern solid-state circuitry, is that when you turn on electricity, there are sparks. And if there are sparks, that is, of course, mavir on Shabbos. But that doesn't apply to our electrical appliances nowadays. Another suggestion that the Chazish also had suggested is that when you have to check the metzias, and I don't know if the metzias will apply nowadays either, but when you run electricity through a wire, the wire gets heated up. And if it gets heated up above Yatz Ledesbo, that will be bishul. The Rambam holds that heating a piece of metal, I don't remember if the Rambam says to look close or just to Jesus Yatz Ledesbo, but either way, the chashash might be that the wires are being heated up by the electricity, the current that's running through them, when you create the circuit, and there would be an issue of bishul. And of course, the nafkamina between all these different ends, these explanations is that the two of them are daraisa. The chazanish's pshat of bona would be a chashash daraisa, and makeh b'patish would be daraisa, while sparks also would be daraisa. Fishel might also. So, and determining whether lemaisa, the poskim assume that regular electricity, meaning a non-filament, not light bulb, not an incandescent light bulb, would only be, most poskim assume is only, at best, at worst, an iser d'rabbanan. And therefore, you could have the solutions of Amila Nachri, B'makom, if it's an Isser D'Rabbanan, then you have Shvus to Shvus, B'makom Mitzvah, so we have Amila Nachri. And the Isser itself is only D'Rabbanan, so that's a Dol D'Rabbanan. So if we have the combination of those two things, I would be able to ask a guy to turn on a light if I have either Makom Mitzvah, Makom Tsa'ar, Makom Hesed Gadol, all the scenarios where Shvus to Shvus, B'makom blank, is permitted. Since Lamaisa, we do assume Lamaisa that electricity, non-filament electricity, is only Lamaisa and Issa D'Rabbanan. As far as fluorescent bulbs, even though I always assume that they were D'Rabbanan, Rabbi Sabalowski pointed out that in consultation with experts, there are some kind of fluorescent bulbs that the starting mechanism does involve a piece of metal getting heated up, and therefore it could be D'Raisa on some fluorescent bulbs, and unless you know which fluorescent bulbs work which way, avoid fluorescent bulbs, you'll have to be, would be an Issa D'Oraisa. Yeah. That is correct. Yes, we assume that electricity is D'Rabbanan. Yes, other than a filament.
Which means all incandescent would be incandescent
D'Oraisa? Whatever there's a filament that gets heated up, that would be D'Oraisa. Yes, that would be matecha shogacheles, which we assume is H, it's just you're allowed to put it out because for whatever side reason. Okay. We're in the home stretch. What about using Shabbos clocks? We know there's machlokas, Tana, and Beis Shammai, and Beis Hillel, if you're allowed to set up something before Shabbos, like a trap. They'll do the malacha on Shabbos. We are mekel, except when it's either mashmiya kol, like a water mill, or if it's maris ayin. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. We are mekel, except if it's mashmiya kol. Why is it going to be also if it's mashmiya kol? Either because of maris ayin, or is it Lusa de Shabbos? And therefore, if you have an alarm clock that makes a call, you set it before Shabbos. So when does it consider it enough? When is it loud enough that it's considered a mashmiya call and going to be a problem, even though it was all done, all the malach was done erev Shabbos? So Rav Moshe said the parameters are, if it's heard only within the room, that's not considered a mashmiya kol, that would constitute the marasayin or the zilus of the Shabbos. But if it's louder, that it would be heard outside of a room, then that would be a problem, even though the malach that you did, setting the alarm, would be a problem. So Baruch Hashem, now we all have our sleep alarms on our phones, our smartphones. I don't have smartphones, I could say we anyway. And we have adjustable volumes, so life became a lot easier with the advent of adjustable volume on our phones. Rav Moshe said in general about Shabbos clocks that theoretically he feels that they would constitute zilus de Shabbos, except for the fact that everybody already does it. And therefore it ends up not being zilus de Shabbos because it's part of the Shabbos experience, and we know that the lights just go out and come on. But if people hadn't started doing it, he would have asked me ahead of time, before people started doing it, the Moshe did feel that it would be zilus de Shabbos, and hence, if there are new technologies that come around, and we will ask ourselves, should I use a Shabbos clock or not, this argument of Rav Moshe is saying that he does consider it to zilus de Shabbos, and as long as it doesn't yet become the fad, it will be a problem. Once it becomes the fad, it's no longer zilus de Shabbos. So, it depends when you catch it. Let's say I have a Shabbos clock, I set my lights on a Shabbos clock, and I want to adjust the Shabbos clock. Am I allowed to adjust it? Well, when I adjust it, I'm really sort of doing something now that will have a ramification half an hour from now. So isn't that grama? Well, midaraisa grama is mutter. But the question is mutter lechatchila on a drabban level also, or is it just mutter daraisa but also drabbanan? So the Shmish Askel Chasa is Mekel and assumes that it's only Asu Drabbanon, and therefore it's the Tzorach Gadol, Tzorach Mitzvah, the Chola, there might be some ways that you could deal with Shabbos clocks. But the Mesorah in our yeshiva is not like that Kula, but rather that the issue with adjusting a Shabbos clock might be a more Chomer Chash, a Daraisa Chash, of Ein Mistapken B'Shem and Shebener, just like you're not allowed to take oil out of a lamp because you're taking away the potential fuel. So too, if you make something happen earlier, if you make the light go on, whatever, I forget which way, and we don't have time to make the cheshbon, changing the Shabbos clock settings might make something happen earlier, to help be a chashash d'oraisa. The Masor in our yeshiva is, once Shabbos comes in, do not touch Shabbos clocks, do not adjust them. As I pointed out, Shmir Shabbos d'chaza does have kulas in some situations when there's a great tzorach. To finish up, refrigerators, what happens, of course, you get a knock on the door, Rabbi, I just realized I left the light on in my fridge, what should I do? So here, what's the problem? The problem is that it's a psikreisha. Is still usher for us to do. Can I tell the guy to open the door for me? What's the lumdus? The lumdus is, I'm not telling him to do a malacha. Amila Nachri says, I can't tell him to do a malacha. I'm not telling him to turn on the light, I'm telling him to open a refrigerator. What happens? Light pops on. That's not what I told him to do. And therefore, there are those poskim who say that the Moshe, I'm sorry, Igros Moshe says it's psik reisha. Tell a guy would be mutter because it's psik reisha, and it would be mutter. However, Shlomo Zalman says, wait a second, that's not called a psik reisha. And here, there's a subtle area that has to be clearly that you have to think about whenever you have a shiloh of psik reisha. Shlomo Zalman says that's not a psik reisha. The way you turn on the light in the fridge is by opening the door. It's not like, oh, I'm just opening the door and the light happens to pop on. No, you turned on the light in the fridge by opening the door. So how to define something as chada maisa, as opposed to being, no, I did one maisa and the psik reisha was something else resulted, that's a subtle point and you have to always evaluate. So halacha lemaisa, it could be that, again, we have machlokes or Moshe and Shlomo Zalman in terms of opening the fridge. So it could be makom b'shas hadchak. One might be able to, I guess, ask Rabbi Sadlowski if you could rely on Moshe to have the guy. I think that's the minute. The minute is that you ask the guy to open it. I hope these were clear, and if you have any questions, you're welcome to contact me.